Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
WTIC, and a good afternoon to you. It's Wednesday, and that means Tom Shattuck is here, as we have lots of national events to discuss. Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you so much. How are you doing?
I am excited about, I love this, anything having to do with the Supreme Court and revealing to the nation more of the rationale for our nation, I think is wonderful.
The rationale, I don't know, I like more of the cynical aspect of it, because if you look now and see who's there, questioning Amy Coney Barrett, essentially mm-hmm. it's the three people who ran for president 3 years ago and began their campaign in this exact same hearing 3 years ago. Kamala Harris, and Cory Booker, and I forgot the other woman who got snowed on. But anyway, they're all there. And reprising the role, this time they're a little less interested in what she did as a high school student than they were when Brett Kavanaugh was there. But I think the whole thing is, it's a wonderful lesson in just complete and total shamelessness. Shamelessness. And
Wait a sec. Gender bias? Do you think gender bias is on display here? I mean, you wouldn't. How would you try to taint a female Supreme Court justice nominee with sexual escapades when she was 17 and not make the accusers look way worse than the accused?
Well, how would you do it? Well, certainly, I think it begins with simply asking the question.
Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
No, Senator Hirono.
Yes, all the time.
Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement related to this kind of conduct?
No, Senator.
It was just a handshake, though, not written down.
Well, it starts with
I love those questions.
Yeah, it starts with asking the question. It's a funny thing. Almost everything Mazie Hirono asked her had something to do somehow with sex.
Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made...
Oh, sorry about that. Here.
Not once, but twice. You use the term sexual preference to describe those in the LGBTQ community.
It's always something.
Wait a sec. Can you explain this to me, Tom? Why is she in trouble for using the phrase sexual preference? I thought that's what you call it. I thought that's what the left calls it, sexual preference.
No, everything about your sexuality is an immutable characteristic. You were born with it. Everything.
Well, so that I know that's their argument, but they're the ones who coined this phrase, sexual preference, didn't they?
Well, right. They've coined a lot of phrases which are now totally verboten and are swears, and you'll find out.
But when did this one get shut off? I didn't get the press release on no longer being able to say sexual preference.
48 hours ago, this one was shut off. Webster's Dictionary is already changing it. Apparently, the AP style people and one other institution like that now are changing their definition.
Serious?
Yeah, to cater to Mazie Hirono in this movement here. They're backfitting.
So I'm not in the, it's not me that's in the dark ages. This is a real-time update of language, because the gay movement has said that you can't have bias against people based on their sexual preference. That's their language.
Right. But the now, that is, when what you've said, of course, now is verboten. But yes, that was at one time. But we have evolved and evolved for the better. And apparently you have
not. We evolved yesterday is what you're saying.
Exactly. We have now evolved. And you are at least one news cycle behind, which means that the cancellation can begin. I mean, obviously it's pathetic. You know what's another thing that's just gone away in the last 72 hours?
What's
last
that?
Week, when Mike Pence was speaking astutely and assertively with Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. Kamala Harris, he was mansplaining to her. Now, Sheldon Whitehouse and Cory Booker and all these other Democrats here are putting these questions, legal and really ethical questions, to Amy Coney Barrett, and there's not an iota of mansplaining happening. That's just gone now. So in is sexual preference as being a slur. Out is mansplaining.
Well, listen, there's two sides to every story.
What is that supposed to mean? Because,
it's the same behavior is different based on who's looking at it. And that's what politics is all about. So you're saying that they're liars and that they're hypocrites. And I'm with you.
Right, but I don't think this is an exercise in how the judiciary works or how our systems of government work. This is an exercise in the most wretched leadership in the history of our country, getting together as a cabal, disinterested in integrity and disinterested in intellectual honesty, and simply there for opportunism and grandiose exposure to the world for fame. And that's what we're seeing here. And I think this is a tougher one for them, though, at the end of the day, because here you have a woman that has defied every excuse, every avenue that they try to define for the people for victimhood. She's defied it all. She's got seven kids, including two minority kids, one special needs child. She handles it. Her and her husband are married and handle it that way. She's a successful mother, and I can't imagine that she sleeps at all with all those kids and all the chaos that must be happening there. And she's a hugely successful woman without doing it by handout, without doing it by having the government lift her up and prop mm-hmm. her up and inflate her. She's done it all on her own. She's somebody who, and this must hurt especially, the people, the Democrats, the liberals on in the Senate there, they're gung-ho for a pro-choice movement. This is a woman who's got a special needs child who, according to their own dictates, would be fair game for the whims of their laws. And Amy Coney Barrett picked all of the hard choices to gain success and has succeeded the whole way. So if you're them, you've got to be looking at somebody who just simply is better in every single way. And she's nice. And she's attractive. And she's, not a jerk. And it's got to be a tough situation to be in there. And so why not just ask questions about, about gender, whatever that thing is we just talked about.
Sexual preference.
Sexual preference, exactly. Why not just...
But I think they've... I think they came into this having decided that she was too good, and it wasn't in their best interest, the Democrats, to make a big scene over her because she's basically appealing, and that most people will like her, and most people will be impressed by her, and most people will be amazed at how smart she is. So I think they decided, especially after what happened whenever Kavanaugh was, how long ago was that? A year ago.
Two years ago, they just
decided to concede this and to make their points about the points they wanted to make, the Affordable Care Act and such.
Well, 2 years ago, it launched three presidential campaigns. I don't see how they learned a lesson from that. 2 years ago, they swept out the Republicans in a blue wave. 2 years ago, they gained from their abhorrent behavior. It worked out for them. So this time, I just think it's a special... It's a different kind of rubric, I think, here, because you've also got the men, who in the committee, who are uncomfortable with approaching her about certain things, She's also got a muzzle on during most of the hearings. She doesn't look like somebody who you can easily transfer, unlike Kavanaugh, where you could say, oh, wait, I can see how this guy could be doing a keg stand and be groping women. You can make the transfer in your mind with him. With her, it's very, very hard to do. So I think they're throwing random chum out there to see if maybe she'll bite or trip up on something. I also think it's possible that before the end of this thing, there's a full-on offensive. All they need is some wacko, you know, out of, you know, Tucson, Arizona or whatever, to say, oh, yeah, I was hanging out with Amy Coney Barrett in 1991.
Yeah. And, that moment, I don't know. I mean, it's possible, but it's getting kind of late for that. I think they're just trying to figure out how to gain whatever they can politically. I think they view themselves as being in a very good position for this election, and they don't want to do anything that could backfire as well.
I think there's something to that. Well, I mean, I think there's something to that as far as the media coverage goes. I think the media feel that they can cover this these proceedings and cover Biden for the first time in more than a year more fairly than ever because he's got a buffer now. You know, he's leading by 10 or 12 points in the nationwide.
Now they're starting
to ask a question here and there, and I think there'll be a question here and there even about Hunter Biden and things about the about packing the courts. Those are now a little more fair game because not only is it a good invalid question, but also it goes to offending them. The fact that he is sending out third-rate flacks to deflect on that question is insulting to them. You know, they went to Columbia Journalism School. They're well-heeled anchors. They don't want to be told by somebody graduated from Northeastern University, you know, that it's the wrong question to ask and that the people are already voting. You know, so I think the media is offended now, and so they're going to move into action a little bit more. I just can't imagine that Mazie Hirono has a bottom, so I don't think that those senators in that hearing are done. I think there is something coming, some attempt to push her over
really?
The edge.
Okay, yes. That'll be interesting to see. Tom Shattuck is here. Stay with us. We'll take some phone calls, Tom, after this on WTIC. WTIC, Tom Shattuck is here. Tom, the Wikipedia page for sexual orientation says sexual identity may also be used to describe a person's perception of his or her own sex rather than sexual orientation. The term sexual preference has a similar meaning to sexual orientation, and the two terms are often used interchangeably, but sexual preference suggests a degree of voluntary choice. This sounds like a misdemeanor to me rather than a felony act of violating the PC police.
Well, I mean, but a misdemeanor, you know, thrown into the hopper in 2020 can develop into something that's got fangs. I mean, a high school party when you're 16 years old, supposedly making a pass at a woman whose eyewitness says it didn't happen, should also be a misdemeanor, if not dismissed. But they certainly made hay out of that.
All right, let's take a couple of phone calls. Tom Shattuck is here. Joseph in Chester, hello.
Hey, you know, you might be right about that polling stuff, but I didn't have a chance to get in yesterday. I want to tell you a few reasons why you might be wrong. Cheryl Atkinson.
Yeah, let me just update Tom on this. Tom, we were discussing polls and why I have been saying that the polls indicate that Trump is losing and that it's gotten worse over the 2 weeks since the debate, that he made a big mistake on the night of the debate, and the energy has gone the other way since then. So what do you want to say about it, Joseph?
Yeah, a few reasons why I think you're wrong. Cheryl Atkinson is probably the most credible journalist in the United States. You remember she's the one that they went after her laptop in the Obama administration, and none of her coworkers at CBS gave a crap. She said that Trump has not lost any of his support base. And she said that Pennsylvania and Michigan are looking good for him. There's no one at the Biden rallies. No one's heard from me, from Gallup or Rasmussen. A lot of people look at past performance being future results. That's not the case. I'm seeing at least 22% of a black vote for Trump. And the big one here is the Catholic vote, which often calls the election. You're looking at a candidate right now that is the gold standard for a Catholic in any kind of public setting. I talked to a lawyer that worked with Rahm Emanuel today, who said that she's the best candidate he's ever seen in his lifetime, and he's about 75 years old. And, you know, one last thing, you know, any good businessman, so basically not Biden, any good businessman knows what a call to action is. You don't go buy a Walgreens placard and it says, you know, come in tomorrow and get a discount. It's a call to action now. And I think Trump understands that a little bit better than the other side does. And so, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I also am seeing some clouds on the horizon for Biden.
Well, that's good. I'm not saying you're wrong either. I'm just saying what I see, and that is a lot of bad news for the president. But hopefully that energy goes the other way. Hopefully these categories that you're referring to of voters, Joseph, that Trump has successfully messaged to them in such a way that he's created secret pockets of support that are not so distinguishable for the pollsters. What do you think about this, Thomas?
Well, I think Joseph's right, certainly, that he has been cultivating black votes now for a couple of years. I mean, the outreach of the black community by a Republican to this level is unprecedented. We have not seen this. And he has been out and out front about this. It's funny because you talk about the First Step Act, you know, the criminal justice reform bill that he signed, and it's as if, according to the media, he wasn't even any part of it, as if he wasn't there. But this was largely a Jared Kushner, Van Jones, you know, project, joint project. And you're right. I mean, I don't know if 22% of the black vote would be astounding, and that would be the night, that would be the headline of the of Election Day. And Democrats' opinion of the black voter would starkly change immediately, and I think we'd reveal some true feelings there. But also, he's certainly going to increase the Hispanic vote. They're forging new voters, you know, previously unregistered voters. That said, the national polling just doesn't look good. And maybe you can throw out a couple of these polls as being spoiled or oversampling. And you can slice and dice by likely voters to registered voters. But still, he hasn't had a good poll. He hasn't really had any good polls against Biden whatsoever. So, I mean, the only evidence you can say for Trump right now is if there's a shy Trump voter, or the fact that so far Trump is one for one in fooling everybody, including the know-it-all class.
Yes.
But you never know.
It's really interesting. I love the way you frame that. He's one for one in shocking the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the what I hear from the listeners who get aggravated by me stating what I think I'm seeing and that going against Trump, I'm just trying to report honestly what I see so people are prepared for the possibility. They seem firmly committed to the fact that because there was a perfect storm 4 years ago, they're more convinced than ever there's going to be a perfect storm this time. And I see that as problematic to count on the same miracle happening twice.
Right. And the thing is that it looks like that if that happens, he will have traded constituencies. So he will have traded suburban housewives and added minorities. And who knows? I mean, that's
yes, and traded senior citizens and traded non-college educated men. And, you know, there's these certain groups that were critical to his base of support where he's seen considerable slippage.
But you never know. And also, he's also having conversations in spaces that nobody else is. So he's in the entire network of podcasts. What Trump is saying aligns with what these podcasters are saying, these free speech advocates, classical liberals. Trump is right there talking about what they're talking about. And those aren't the kind of people, and those listeners aren't the kind of people who answer the phone for a pollster. I mean, who answers the phone at all anymore? So, I mean, it is possible. But certainly traditional polling does not bear it out. That said, 4 years ago, we were talking to political consultants who said, I said, what if he wins 2 weeks ahead of the time? And they said, if he wins, then I have no business being in this business anymore. And those pollsters are all now back in the business, or those consultants are now all back in the business.
Yes. Well, that's true. But at the same time, it was such a fluky outcome, 10,000 votes in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about these little niche kinds of twists and turns. We're talking to Tom Shattuck. We do this on Wednesdays. We're talking about national politics. We're talking about Judge Barrett and her confirmation hearings. And we will take more phone calls when we continue after we get ourselves a news update. Jump on the phones, 860-522-9842. We will talk more in just a few on WTIC. Yes. When Tom Shattuck speaks, it sounds a lot like that guitar. WTIC Tom joins us on Wednesday's first hour. We talk some national politics. Here we go again. Tom, thanks once again for being here.
Thank you. What a blast. What a time, man.
Yes, it is electrifying. It is a blazing hot guitar solo right now. It's so exciting to be tapped into what's going on in the world. So, what is for you? You've been giving us a lot of flowery language and stuff, but where's the electricity? What's the third rail of this in your mind?
The third rail? I'll tell you the most
chilling
thing.
How does this actually change anything politically as opposed to just this fight being this fight?
The Supreme Court stuff right now specifically or what generally the political battle?
Well, whatever excites you, but the thing we need to do is provide context for people. Go ahead.
Let me tell you what has gotten me more excited and horrified. So I know a person who is a good progressive, intersectional, wacko, lefty, crazy, progressive person, and, George Bush is a war criminal, everything you'd expect. Just obviously, if you say anything, if you get gender preferences wrong, she's got the LGBTQ etc. rulebook right there.
She's ready to attack.
She is made to attack. Absolutely. A few weeks back, she had a Facebook post saying, you don't have to feel bad for hoping President Trump dies now that he has coronavirus. I mean, would you feel bad if Hitler died? No. So let's celebrate this and hope Trump dies. Essentially. Mm-hmm. A few days later, she got back on to Facebook and said, by the way, just so you all know, I'm really tired. I've been working all day. I work for this company.
Ooh.
I work for this company that calls Facebook posts for truth and accuracy and fake news. She went on to say that this going through this Dinesh D'Souza whatever thing is really tough for me and makes me sick to even have to watch it. Nobody should have to do this. So I thought about that. Then today, going off of the New York Post, off of those revelations that Hunter Biden was, they've got the receipts now essentially showing him wheeling and dealing with Burisma, and there's supposedly some 15-minute video of him with some women and doing drugs, and there's pictures of him with some kind of crack. There's all sorts of stuff. The New York Post hit the mother load of dirt on Hunter Biden. So anyway, as of today, a couple of hours ago, employees at the New York Post have been prohibited from posting it on Facebook and Twitter. They've been stopped and given messages saying that the stuff is not verifiable. And
you mean blocked by the social media companies, not by their employers?
Exactly, blocked by the social media companies, and even third party like other third parties who want to retweet the thing. They're getting messages saying, "No, we're not going to do this."
Really? So the New York Post is not a valid source of reporting, according to Facebook and Twitter.
Right. And a bunch of people, blue check people, are trying to retweet this stuff and screenshotting these images, showing Twitter shutting them down, saying, "No, we're not going to allow this." So they're not allowing this dissemination of better sourced news than a whole bunch of other stuff that we've gotten from the left. You know, the Melania Trump tapes with her buddy taping her, who published those tapes. Those are no problem. Those can go right out. Anything Woodward talks about, those can go right out absolutely in a second, even if he's selling a book. You know, the Steele dossier, throw that out there, with Trump with hookers in Moscow, et cetera. Those can go right out. But now there is now a concerted effort to block news items from going out into the world and social media. And to see it, to see my hapless, idiotic friend say, well, I got this great new gig. I can stop conservative news from going out. And now seeing it being flagged and stopped from being spread. I mean, that's a problem. That's really a problem.
Yeah.
That's somebody.
That's a pretty shocking place for us to be.
Yes. And so where do we get anything? I mean, people listen to you, and that's on the radio. That's something. But, the distribution you get from social media is absolutely huge. Absolutely yes. Huge. And
Thomas, let's talk more about that in a minute. Let's grab some phone calls. 860-522-9842. Joe in New Hampshire. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Joe.
I got three things. Number one, you were talking about last-minute surprise at those hearings for the Supreme Court judge. I agree with that because the Kavanaugh debacle started on the last day of the hearings where everything was supposed to be wrapping up, and then that news came through Feinstein, the one that had the Chinese spy limo driver for 14 years. That's what turned that hearing upside down. It was the last day. So is tomorrow the last day for the hearings, or is it Friday? Because I expect something to happen, on that day.
I don't think there's a couple more days, but you're right. It was at the tail end. And why wouldn't you? By the way, I mean, if you want to make a name for yourself, Cory Booker got in the bright lights. Kamala Harris is now the vice president, or could be very soon. And I'm sorry, Amy Klobuchar is the other one. These people got up to the big stage because they had they put on a good performance. So why wouldn't somebody do it? That's the template.
That's right. And then the next thing about votes, margin of victory in Michigan, 10,000 votes. I think, Todd, you forget, the day or 2 days after the election in 2016 came out, one of the precincts in Detroit had 121,000 eligible voters, and Hillary Clinton got 132,000 votes. In other words, the people that were fixing the ballots were too stupid to make sure that the total vote count didn't exceed the eligible voters. Now, that was never corrected, and she got an 11,000 vote margin of victory in that precinct of Detroit. You can look it up. No one was held accountable for that because Trump ended up winning anyway. But that was an 11,000 vote discrepancy. And you're going to see a lot of that around the country this year's election, where you have more votes than eligible voters if you do the math. But here's the third thing. Do you think Wolf Blitzer will have a job by the end of the week or next week? Did you hear about the Nancy Pelosi interview with Wolf Blitzer? I think it was on CNN.
They were having a brawl with each other, huh?
Well, here's the thing. You should get the sound bites. It's hilarious, sad at the same time. Nancy Pelosi is the modern day Marie Antoinette of the United States of America 220 years later. She is just like Marie Antoinette, her arrogant, uppity, unbelievable, out of touch. She accused Wolf Blitzer of providing cover for the Republicans, and he was pleading with her, why don't you try to negotiate, get on the phone with the president? She said, I will do no such thing. She was so upset she did it, Joe Biden. She said, you're always trying to cover for Obama. That's what she said. She meant Trump. It's right on tape. And then she concluded the interview. He says, there's people out there. They're hungry. They're begging. They need to be fed. And she says, you're not feeding them, but I feed them. She goes, I feed them. And she's yelling at him. It's a spectacular interview. You should get the sound bites. And Todd, I think you'd be playing some of them for a while. But look, good luck.
So,
I enjoy the show. Thanks.
Joe,
go ahead.
Joe, hang on one sec. Just go back to, I want to bring you back to what you said about the rigging of votes in Detroit. Put that in a context for us so we know what it means to you. Why are you mentioning it to us?
Well, everybody's saying Trump only won Michigan by 10,000 votes. Well, those 11,000 votes, Hillary got, I think, 98.5%, but that was counting all the votes, and she had 121,000.
Right. So I understand the point you're making, but what's the meaning of it in your mind? What does it tell us about how we can interpret election results? Are you saying the system is so rigged that there's no such thing as losing an election for Republicans or for Trump?
No, I'm talking about margins of victory. You take California in 2016. How many Republicans out of the 3.5 million voted? Probably all of them. And Hillary Clinton's margin of victory was mostly California margin.
Yeah, but it sounds like what you're saying is that our voting system is so deteriorated that we can't accept the results.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you remember this, Todd. 2 years ago, I told you the author's name. Code Red is the name of the book in the 2018 election, the congressional one. Code Red with the algorithms. I think Tom is aware of this. There's two out of the three voting machine companies, two out of Canada, they're connected to the DNC. And the way you rig the election through the voting machines, now that we have mail-in ballots, of course, that dilutes that. But I think people that mail-in ballots may vote twice anyway. But here's the thing. With the algorithms, you rig the machine. where if you vote for Trump, they set it ahead of time on a percentage basis. 1/10 of your vote goes to Biden, and that's how they, you know, move the votes.
Compensate.
Over. But the name of the book is Code Red.
Okay, Joe, thank you. 860-522-9842. Where, how do you fall on that, Thomas?
On voting and rigging the
this, what Joe's saying about the system being so corrupted already that it's a rigged system, that Bernie would just call it a rigged system.
Well, and Bernie has a different reason to call it a rigged system, but that was a cabal, you know, planning against him. As far as the machines go, I'm not a big subscriber into the Diebold machines doing this or that. I do think certainly that there are grassroots level operators who would happily throw away a bunch of votes, or happily, sure. We've already seen with voter harvesting, you know, happily do what they need to sway their precinct or sway the local elections, certainly, do their part in the national elections. Yes, of course, these are, you know, immoral humans don't turn moral on election day. I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever. I mean, like I just told you about my friend who was working for Facebook indirectly now. You know, she is thrilled. She was hoping Trump is dead. Now she gets to decide what messaging about him gets out there. I mean, of course, they think that they're freedom fighters. They don't think they're doing anything wrong by throwing away votes. They think they're doing the right thing. I just heard this interview with Will Salatin from Slate Magazine, and he said, well, I want to let you know that I believe that we're at a state of emergency, and we were ever since Trump was elected. We've been in a state of emergency. So in a state of emergency, there are all sorts of allowances that, you know, that you allow yourself.
Moral justifications.
Of course. Absolutely. This is the revolution. You know, everybody take up arms, do whatever it can to save the homeland. And they've talked themselves into this. So I would put nothing past anybody on the left. Nothing past anybody.
But really what you're saying is that when you hear that there, you know, 95% of the votes in a certain precinct go to a specific candidate, and that the suggestion is that that's a rigging, what you're saying is that's an organic bottom-up kind of stuff happens in elections, and there are people who behave inappropriately, but that doesn't mean it's a top-down coordinated effort to that suggests a conspiracy to control a federal election.
Right. I don't know about that. I know that for agitations and other disruptions in society, that those come from top down. Certainly we saw some of the Russians did through a couple of Craigslist get-togethers in front of Trump towers. And certainly Soros was happy to pay people to show up on site. I mean, just think about, you know, the SEIU buses people in. Now that's just considered, you know, part of politics. But if we're the NRA busing people in, that would be considered extraordinary.
Yes. No, but I consider that stuff election rigging. Hang on, Thomas. Let's take a quick break. Tom Shattuck is here. We will continue our conversation with your calls, 860-522-9842, in just a moment on WTIC. Well, it's Wednesday. It's first hour. Tom Shattuck is here. We are talking some national politics. There is the Barrett nomination process, which continues. Tom says bad things are going to happen. The big blow up is still to come. Joe said the same thing. Your thoughts on that? 860-522-9842. Just a reminder, the rant line is there waiting for your calls anytime, like right now. 860-751-4698. Feel free to rant. All right, Tom. So what else is on your mind in terms of how we should be watching what's going on, where things are at on the national political scene? What is keeping you up in the middle of the night with concern?
So I am, I don't know if this is concern, but noticing the media is beginning to cover Democrats again. Beginning to cover Joe Biden again. Jake Tapper the other day had no time for the Biden person, you know, giving him the runaround on court packing. I think that's for a couple of reasons. Like we talked about, I think they've got a big lead in the polls, so it allows them to, you know, at least feign, you know, unbiased reporting for a little bit. But at the same time, I also think that if Trump's gone, a lot of the revenue and passion leaves immediately from CNN. And what else are they going to fall back onto? They can't fall back onto the, you know, careful, thoughtful analysis of Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo. There's nothing there. There's no heft or weight or information there. Eventually, they're going to have to find what few reporters they have left and have them start reporting again and having journalistic standards. And so I look to see, I've seen some examples of that. Jonathan Carl's been doing it over at ABC as well. He's been exasperated publicly about the third-rate runaround and snow job he's gotten from the Biden camp. Their refusal to answer any questions and only hand him lazy, undercooked lies. I think he feels insulted. And he knows that once Trump is gone, this is no longer about a revolution. This is now about journalism again. And he can't be made to look a fool as these flacks simply lazily brush him off. And
I think the point you're making about CNN mm-hmm. is a really important one, that the national media across the board has been enjoying the power that it gets from the energy that Trump provides. And a big part of the reason that they're so fixated on everything Trump does is because that's what people want to see. And what does happen if and when that goes away? What does right. replace it? How does the media get by?
Right. It might have been Joseph who talked about the Pelosi thing. But, you know, when Wolf Blitzer asked her about stimulus checks, she started to answer the question, then doubled back and essentially said, why the hell are you asking me this? You don't get to ask me this.
And as you know, there are Americans who are being evicted from their homes. They can't pay the rent. Many Americans are waiting in food lines for the first time in their lives. Can you look them in the eye, Madam Speaker, and explain why you don't want to accept the president's latest stimulus offer?
Well, because thank you very much, Wolf, and I hope you'll ask the same question of the Republicans about why they don't really want to meet the needs of the American people.
You better put that to Republicans too, Wolf, by the way. I don't know when this crap started, she's saying to him. You know,
that's right.
I didn't come here to be
questioned. Are you allowed to ask that question, she's saying?
Right.
We don't field questions like that.
Right. When did this change? You know, this is not our arrangement, Wolf. We're here about the bad guy in the White House. Now you're asking me about legislation? Oh, how dare you?
You know what else that shows, though, is the New York Times did a big feature on what it was that was driving the lack of a deal on another stimulus bill. And what they were reporting was that both the Democrats and the Republicans have a reason to not want to support another deal. And it sounded like they were putting more of the blame on the Democrats because the Democrats are perfectly happy to sit and wait through the election and then deal with it when Biden takes office, even though that means another 3 months, 4 months of misery for the American people.
No,
maybe that's what's making them bristle and making people like Wolf Blitzer feel like, okay, the New York Times says this is the kind of reporting we have to do now.
Right, and it's also the hubris that comes with it. Yesterday I asked Senator Ed Markey, I said, why not just give people something now, the $1,200, give them something? And he said, well, if I give them $1,200 now, and if we give them bailout of airlines right now, and if we give them bailing out of businesses right now, well, then we've lost all our leverage. I thought, wow, he's just saying that, as if we're not hearing it. You know, they're so comfortable. They've been so, you know, covered, you know, not covered in the last few years, that you speak freely and know or assume nobody's going to pick up even their...
things that are blatantly horrific to say. Like, let them eat cake in the meantime.
Yeah.
We've got bigger fish to fry. We've got politics to do here. We can't let the American people get in the way. All right, Tom Shattuck, that's it. We're out of time. I can't believe it. Thank you. We'll see you again next week.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All righty. Tom Shattuck from the Lowell Sun newspaper, where he is senior editor, and he's a radio guy I used to work with in Boston. Always fun to have him here.
From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel.
What's up, team? Just two people can't launch a brand. It takes a village.
We are MMD Hollywood.
Wowee.
Which stands for medical marijuana.
Due to restrictions, we can't tell you everything about our new reality series. But what we can say is the idea behind it is fully baked.
I don't know.
High Hopes. Streaming on Hulu.